shall I tell you what you said so far? You said that your father was a flint glass cutter and you were quite poor, but not very poor. Is that right?
Yes.
And he gave his wife 25 shillings a week, and that didn't change, you know, however...
I don't know anybody would hear this, of course, but, I mean, most people, of course, wouldn't know the other children, wouldn't.
You went
but I was talking, really, you see, the 25 shillings a week for the children, and how difficult it must have been for women, decent class women, and lower middle class women, to keep going and do as they did.
What sort of woman was your mother?
When I come to think about it, you see, and she'd got more brains, although she had to leave school when she was nine and couldn't read very well, to have done something wider than, because you see, she put all her energy into a house. And she was absolutely house proud, absolutely mad, you know, see?
Fanatic,
really. I mean, you couldn't touch. We had two new houses. And I mean, she wouldn't sit down and have a cup of tea and drive. She saw a bit of dust on, she'd get up like that, you see.
How many were there of you? There was you and...
Four.
Four?
There were four of us. My sister died when she was seven, one sister. And another died, my other sister died 2 years ago. She with cancer she had. And my brother died three years ago. So, of course, you see, I'm the only one left of the four.
Yes.
And so that...
So there are four of you.
Four of us.
Did your mother have a rough deal, do you think, then?
Well, I don't think so.
She was quite happy, was she?
Do you think? No, they were. I don't think lots of them were not happy because they weren't using their. You see, in those days, it was almost a disgrace for the woman to go to work. You see, and of course, unless you could earn a bit, say by sewing or something like that, you see, which you could mend and end in. I mean, getting to the point, the men were the bosses. They held the purse strings, and my father was very good. He didn't smoke and he didn't drink, but he used to like to spend money on books and his garden, roses, you see. But my mother and the old someone and the other people like that, well, they had to manage in the house. There's one thing about it, there was no inflation in those days.
No, that's true. No.
See? And that's... But I mean, I think about her, I often think about her now, the way she used to keep the food and that sort of thing. Our house and our table was really like a good class hotel, the way she kept it.
She cooked herself, did she?
Cooked, yes. And we had so much variety, however she did it, I don't know on the money. At all, the variety.
And she never did any work at all?
Except housework.
Except housework.
She didn't go, no. And father used to help a bit with the children, really. He used to take us out. He used to take us out quite a lot on excursions. Oh, it was great, you know. You could go from... when I was quite young, really, I knew all about London. The old London, because you could go from Birmingham to London, 12 o'clock, and come back from London midnight. However we got home, I don't know, we were just about like this walking, you know, and half a crown, the old money, adults. No, 6 shillings a day and half a crown for children.
What did you do when you got there, Mrs.
Cool. My goodness me, what did we do? She'd gone with my father. He was only a little man, you know. And so some of my friends, now the college friend Emily I'm telling about, she lives in Bath now. When I saw her some time ago, she said, she lived in London then. She said, you know, the first time I came to London, Edith, she said, was with your father. Well, because my friends used to say to me, oh, shall I go to London? My mother can't take me, got to stay at home, look after the family, you know, that sort of thing, and so on. But shall I go? So I used to say to my father, can so-and-so come? Oh, yes, more than earlier. Bring the half crown, and used to say, and a bag of food, And he got about half a dozen kids used to take up to London, you know, little man. He gets his never used to ask a policeman the way, oh no, never even think of it, really. Looked on his map, saying where we were going, looked on the map and then, come on you kids, here's the bus, get on, all of you, get on, get on. And I mean, say, Houses of Parliament, we used to stand outside there to see Lloyd George and people and all those people going on. Most thrilling, you know, really it was. Westminster Hall, stood on the spot where the King was stood before his execution and so on, and Westminster Abbey, and then used to come out. All this was done in half a day, you can tell. Auschwitz only came again.
What about food? Where did you have your food?
Oh, we all had our own little bag of food. That's another funny thing that happened. With a bottle of tea, usually, you see. Got it. I'll tell you about that in a minute or two, some of that. Well, and then, of course, stand on the bridge, you know, and watch the boats go by. And then it was down the river to St. Paul's, you know. However we did it, I don't know, back again. And then we used to go to the Zoological Gardens. Of course, we went online this till the train didn't go back to 12 o'clock, you know.
So you saw everything?
Well, I'm best thing, you know, we can do it now.
But you said your father
but
read,
it was so
read
cool.
Books.
And we used to go to the exhibitions, you know, all the big exhibitions, Franco-British and all those.
Did you? Yeah.
And I remember going to the Franco, we went to the Franco-British, and Mother gave, we all had our bags with food in, you say, and a bottle of tea and that sort of thing. And so they wanted to go, they all wanted to go on the roundabouts, but I didn't. I went down the path and I wanted to go into a tent where the X-rays were. You see, that's me, I'm going to go on the X-rays. I didn't believe that you could look through anything like that. I thought, well, I'd go and see. And well, you wouldn't remember Hall Edwards, the...
No.
He was one of the pioneers, you know. He had all his hands with all taken off, you know,
oh, yeah.
Because of that sort of thing. Well, I went in this place, so I sat in the front row, and it went on the screen. So the lecturer said, he looked at me, and he said, we'll see what this young lady's got in her bag. So he puts my bag up. Oh, the howlings, you, the laughter. Do you know what my mother gave me my tea in a whisker bottle? started young, she has. Oh, I didn't know where to put myself, you know, really, because I've never had any whisker.
Was that the Franco-British? That
I believe it was the Franco-British.
Yes.
Mm. Yes, I think it would be. Yes, oh, I should never forget that. This time was... How many years ago, to be a good many years. Now, my husband's died 29 years ago, and he would have been 100 this year if he'd lived, you see. Mm. Now, he used to have quite a number of magazines that came out every month. I mean, we had the Children's Encyclopedia. I used to rush home from school for that. Used to do that. Arthur Lee's book.
Mm, I know, yeah.
You see?
Yes.
And then he bought, well, I've got a lot now, and he used to have them covered, you know. And my mother used to grumble because, you see, she needed more money in the house to keep us going, and he used to spend money on these books, really. And he never let her know how much he'd got in the bank. And he was a man who... determined to be independent. You see, there was no old age pensions in those days at all. And he used to try to put what money he could into a bank, you see. So, therefore, you didn't dare to ask more than what you were given. And I'd have such a job, you know, keeping going on 6 months a week at grammar school. We had to go without a good lot, really, you see. You see, if I had a cup of coffee for my lunch, then I couldn't go on the tram home, and therefore I had to walk, which would have been 3 to 4 miles But of course, we nearly all wrote the grammar school people. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't think of going on the tram, you know, really.
What sort of books did he read himself? Do you like Dickens or novels?
No,
or
I don't think so. No, no, he liked different travel books. And I know he taught himself a lot. He got a very big copybook hand. You see, he had to leave school when at 8, the age of 8. And they lived at Briley Hill, Stourbridge, where all the glassworks were, you see, where the Huguenots, I believe, had settled there with all this glass, you see. And I suppose he was very a bright kid, and he was apprenticed there. Really. But his father died and left his mother with 4 children, and she had to work in the brickworks, you see. A very hard life, because the mum was very, very poor. So he taught himself, you see, and I know he used to teach himself Latin. He was mad about Latin. He used to do Latin. But you see, considering the hours they worked, which in those days, my father used to go out. Then he came to Birmingham, so he got a pretty decent job in Birmingham under the Arculuses in Broad Street. Broad Street, he was, you see, because he was very clever. He had piles of books, piles like this with patterns in. I was annoyed with my sister. I don't know what she did, and she was one of those who cleared things out. But you imagine piles of notebooks like that with all these things. They all had names, all those patterns.
Did they really? Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
All had names.
So he was a really educated man, your father?
Well, he was educated, that he educated himself.
Was he a liberal?
Oh, yes.
Thought he would be.
Because, you see, the liberals were radicals in those days.
Oh, yes, yes.
They were the radical party.
Yes.
Liberals.
What about...
You see, and Lloyd George and those people.
Was he a dissenter? Non-conformist?
I don't think that. They went to church or anything of
Didn't
that.
They?
But I was christened in a congregational church chapel.
But they didn't go to chapel, your parents.
Well, they did go occasionally, but to tell you the truth, I don't think they went because partly because of the money business.
What do you mean, the money?
Well, because I used to go to a Wesleyan chapel there when I was a girl, really, because I was mad about singing. This was a Wesleyan chapel, really. I was mad about singing, and it's all very queer. And I mean, lots of things I'm telling you really tie up with what I consider was a previous life of mine in France. It's, you see? People say, well, one old man said to me some time ago, he said, now, if I could only remember my previous lives...
Were you in the choir then, or what?
Oh, I could sing like a... I tell you, Handel, you see, always been damn that. Well, now, this chapel, they always had, for the Sunday school anniversaries, they always had something from Handel. So we children, you see, we knew it. I mean, I knew the Messiah from beginning to end when I was quite young. And then we used to have out of Elijah too. Elijah and the Messiah were the two chief things. Are you musical? Do you know anything about it?
Oh, yes, a bit, yes, yes. But what did you do? Did you go once a week to practice or what?
Yes, practice. If you didn't go to the practice, you weren't in, you know. And we used to have it 3 Sundays, these. This place, the Wesleyan in Peel Street, Winston Green, and the Congregational Church, they were rivals over this business, you know, really. And then...
What do you mean rivals? What happened?
Who could sing the Messiah and the Hallelujah Chorus better than anybody else? We used to have a proper... Oh, my word. Well, the people around and the distributor complaining about it. Because if you're all going the way, bounce the roof off, orchestras, well, no, really. and of course, and I used to say to my father, well, when I was quite a little girl, I used to say, oh, I wouldn't have missed that for anything. I used to say, now, if you'll only buy me a piano, I said, I know I can play it. I didn't get a piano till I was about nearly 11, really. I said, when you're about 11, then you can buy a piano. I said, I know I can play it if you'll buy me a piano, really. And I was teaching when I was 12.
Were you really?
I had six pupils when I was 12.
Okay. So you just had a natural gift.
And I didn't, I couldn't play a scale. And I've learned, you see, as I've gone on, really, you see. See, I've got a diploma, an ALCM, but that's about the least diploma. But,
So you were self-taught, really, as a pianist?
Well, I really was, because I've never had any very brilliant lessons from anybody. I've never been taught the way I teach my people.
So what happened, when you went to chapel, did they teach you how to sing?
Oh, no, anything like that, you get in with it, you see. Children get in with it, you don't teach at all. You can tell how much, you see, we younger ones, they always had forms, you see, right up, you see. The Arlars, you know, and the cheap ones down below, like they got in the town hall. And then it was all put up like, and we younger ones were really on the top lot. You listen to this, really. So, I remember it to this day, the Hallelujah Chorus. They did the Hallelujah, and it comes in a tenor part. Lum, 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 something like that, really, you see. Well, I remember now to this day, Mr. Freer was the conductor, little fat man, Mr. Freer. Mr. Lyons was the organist. And, came to this part, and without anything, I sang the part as well. It was my piping little voice at the top there, singing these men's voices. Of course, you know, all the sensation it could cause, evidently. Mr. Freer said, they all stopped, you know. Mr. Freer said, now if you do that again, Edith, I have to put you out of the choir. I thought, oh, if I go out of the choir, I shall simply die. And they did it again, and I did it again.
How often?
And they had to do it again. Right from the very beginning, they had to do it again in this particular. I kept my mouth shut all the way. I never sang after that. I thought, if I'd put me out of the choir. Oh, yes, I knew that.
Why did you want to stay in the choir?
What?
Why did you want to stay in the choir?
To sing, of course.
To sing, yes. You like the singing?
Oh, well, yes. Mm. I mean, it was absolutely natural, that was the sort of thing to me.
Wasn't there anywhere else you could sing? I mean, chapel was the only place to sing.
Oh, yes, well, of course it was, except at school, really. We didn't do a lot of singing at school, not the only the children, only a little song. We did a lot of it. So what we did a lot in those days in the schools at this Dudley Road, really. When I come to think about it, it must have been one of the the first schools in Birmingham, really, top schools, I should think. Now, there were charts all around the schools, you know. Do, re, mi, fa, so, la, ti, do, and then you had a modulator like that, and every day, you see, after the prayers, there were all these modulators in the classrooms going, and the teachers were doing something like this, I don't know what it was, do, me with the hands, all that sort of thing, really.
So they taught at the school.
And then after that, there were the, tables all around the school, twice, one, or two, all it was like a busy beehive. That's a bit like, I'm sure it is now.
So,
it's all very well, you know, really, but I mean, we did do it, you know, we did. And as for reading, well, I mean, when I was a pupil teacher under Miss Bolton after that, my God, not one of our children in the infants and junior went out of that school and couldn't read into the top school, whatever they did in the top school.
How often did you go?
Reading and arithmetic. This is how we were taught. There were two pupil teachers there, part-time, and Miss Hutchinson was there. Then we used to go to the pupil teachers' centre to pass our exams to get into university, you see. And a part-time teacher. And I used to have to take the whole school, the same as I worked as hard as the other teachers, for 3 shillings a week. That's as we had.
Can I stop you? You started off at a board school.
Yes.
And you went on to King Grammar Edward school. Summerhill
yes.
Grammar School. Yes. And you got a scholarship there. So how long
I got
did you...
a scholarship for the grammar school.
Yes.
And I was head girl.
And how long did
and
you stay?
Listen to this.
Yes.
Listen to this. I expected to get another scholarship to take me to the high school in Birmingham or to the university. Solely because I've got a right to expect it, because it was a recognised thing that the head girl always had that scholarship. Well, listen to this. There was an election on. The election.
1906?
No, there was an election on, and I suppose it was, really. See, I should be about, I should be 16 then.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see.
16, and I was born in 1893.
Mm-hmm.
The year of the serpent, according to the Chinese,
mm-hmm.
and born in the year that the was on. Well, of course, the grammar schools were the absolute heights of snobbery, and tourists, absolute, really. There were some liberals there. And there was one teacher, Miss Hazel. Now, she was the sister of Dr. Hazel, and he was a Liberal MP for West Bromwich. So she thought a lot of herself, see. Oh, she did, really. But the others, of course, were Tories, you see, rank Tories, really. Well, you see, I wasn't either. And because, and Edith, me, I was the only one in the school who marched up to the school in a big red rosette socialist. Oh, I've often thought about it. And I'm perfectly certain it was that Dane that took the scholarship off me because I was a socialist. And she was liberal, and one of the girls under me, the lowest, the next class under me, although she was a clever girl, but she was in the next class below me, would have had the chance for that scholarship the next year, you understand?
Yeah.
Her father was agent for the Liberal Party in West Bromwich. So you see the click, really?
Yeah.
And she got the scholarship for that girl, May Rowan. And I'm confident, you know, it didn't strike me until some time after.
That was political reason, you didn't get
that
it?
I didn't get it.
So what did you do next?
Well, of course the headmistress had me up, you see, after the exams, Miss Vale. And she had to break the bad news to me. And at the same time, same year, my sister died, so you can tell, I had some bad karma there. Shadman, and I thought she was going to tell me I'd got the scholarship, you see, really. And so she said, she was very sorry, she said, but I hadn't been able to get, my exam papers were not good enough, really. And she said, so that I hadn't got the scholarship. Well, of course, I was devastated. But anyhow, I pulled myself together. And, of course, I'm a bit like that, really. And I said, I shall be well go to college, I said, in spite of all of you, whether I've got the scholarship or not. Just like that, you know. Oh, really, wasn't that? But I was devastated. I don't know how I got home. I remember going through the dining room, and the housekeeper, a little woman, she came out to the kitchen, she said, been going on that too again, has she? And of course, I stayed away a long time, died. That my sister died, and I stayed away, you see, for a bit. Mm. I did go back to get my books, I think. But really, it was the best thing out for me.
Why?
Because if I'd gone to that school, my parents couldn't have afforded. The scholarship wasn't big enough to really keep you, you know what I mean? It wasn't big enough to keep me. I'd already had a decent grant from the Birmingham Education Committee. Because we had grants, all the people who want scholarships in the Birmingham schools had a grant from the Birmingham Education Committee, you say, to keep. I'd already had that. So, you see, I should have lost one of those. But, you see, instead of going to the high school and thinking myself a cut above everybody else because I'm dumb, you see, and then going on to the university to take a degree, you see, that sort of thing, and not being any help to my parents at all, and they could really not really afford for me to go. Instead of that, I went to as a pupil teacher. We had quite good lessons at the pupil teacher centre to get us into the pass matric, and also we were given 3 or 4 shillings a week, which was a bit of money in those days. See,
where did you go for your training? Where was it?
Pupil teacher centre,
yes.
Ousel Street.
In Birmingham?
Along Broad Street, under Miss Bowler.
I see.
Yes, under Miss Bowler. And then we used to do part-time in the schools. And Miss Bolton was the headmistress, and she was a very good trainer. She had a name for training teachers. When I got another job, when I came out of college, one of the inspectors came in. He saw something I had done on the board. I'd do a lot of blackboard work in those days. There wasn't enough money. And he said to me, and do you believe that, Miss Pitt, what you've written on the board?
Your name was Pitt,
that,
was it?
Yes. Do you believe that? Oh, I was only thinking about it the other morning. See? I said, well, there's a good many ways of looking at it. There's one thing, I was never afraid of the inspectors, you know, and the other teachers were. Lots of people there. But, I mean, if you talk to them straight and you put them in their place, it's like heads. See? They know where they are. And lots of heads, you know, they're simply dying to sit on new teachers. What, are you a head?
No.
Absolutely.
You've inherited your father's independence.
Absolutely, they're simply dying. Now, I should tell you about my daughter, you see, my youngest daughter. Because, you see, she teaches now in Somerset. She's had two schools down there. Because Miss Bolton was one of the downright ones, you know, really. Every child in this school's not going out till they can read and they know their tables. They know nothing else. I tell you, she used to, when I gave a lesson, just give a lesson, you had to write out every word of what you reckoned you were going to tell those children, all in order, so and that sort of thing, see, every word. Then sometimes she'd come to listen to you. I shall never forget one lesson. This is the way she used to teach. Mine, they were mostly what you call slum children, if you know what I mean, really, see? Mind you, a good many of those slum children had got up here, you know, as well. Not saying it about them. But, you see, you do find different classes. I remember one lesson I had to give on apple blossom. Well, I couldn't get any apple blossom, not in the slums of Birmingham or anything like that. I had to do drawings on the board. And she came in after to see how much I taught these children, which I don't think I taught them very much, really. I think they've had more slices of apple than they've had. Weren't anything. Poor kids never saw any apples half the time. She came around, there were 50 in the class, mind you. Spoken. I can see her now. She's dead now, many years now. Now you tell me the colour of the apple blossom. Well, of course, the kid was terrified, he didn't know, really. She went round the class, and every one of those fit children had to say, colour of apple blossom, white with pink edges. Sometimes I thought it was pink with white edges. I went and looked at mine to see who was right the other day. White with pink edges. You, white with... That's how she used to teach. But mind you, I mean, let a child, you know, move. They don't want to, you know, the children did. I mean, especially the boys. They like anybody like that in the school, do you tell me?
They like to know where they are.
Yes, it's awfully jolly. They'd rather have someone like that than they play about and you can't do anything at all, they boys.
But how old were you when you started being a pupil teacher?
Then? I was 16.
I see, yes.
Yeah, I used to have to take all the school... in the mornings, for hymns and a little prayer, not much of one, and a song. They were all in rows like that.
Did you teach all subjects, Mrs. Fulford, or just music?
Oh, well, I didn't teach music. There weren't any music teachers
in the school
in those days.
Three arts, really.
You had to teach all that lunch and all sorts of things, really.
I see. You taught all subjects, really.
Anyhow, I did. It was better that I did that. That I went there, really, than went to the Toppinose High School, which they were, you know, really. People there, very snobbish.
So were you living at home all this time?
Oh, yes. So then, you see, we did 2 years pupil teaching, jolly good, and teaching in the schools. And then, of course, you were working all the time from the trick and to get into the university, you see. Well, now, my parents couldn't afford for me to stay 3 years to get a BA at all, so it was only a 2-year training. And then we came out and we went into...
That was at Birmingham University, was it?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm. Yes, day training, day training part. But we had a lot of lectures with on the university side. Some of them we paid for. And we had a grant of about £12, I think it was either £12 or £20 a year. That's all we had, a year. Mm. And we had to pay for books out of that and also for some lectures. We had to pay 4 guineas for the European history, which was an absolute scandal, and 4 guineas for the psychology. Psychology under Professor Muirhead was all right, but this the European history was nothing but a scandal.
What was wrong with it?
And that's where I think a lot of students made complaints, and the quality of the teaching at the universities is not good enough. Mm. You have to learn by yourself. Now, I tell you what, I used to go to Birmingham, into the Birmingham Library, you see. And at that time, I was beginning to think about a lot of things, and I started to study Buddhism, you see. Then I got into, I saw the Isis Unveiled by Madame Blavatsky one day, and I got that out, and I was absolutely amazed, absolutely enthralled, and theosophy, key to theosophy. I used to go every dinner time studying these bad things, really. So I looked on the shelves one day, and I saw the book, European History, so I got it out. And they were the very lectures that this person, Mrs. So-and-so, was giving to about 300 students at 4 guineas a term. Mm. The very things, word for word. Mm. And we got to go and sit in that horrible, what do they call it, theatre, on devil a hard suits and all that sort of thing, and take down what she was reading out, and it was in the book in the library. I went to the library and I copied every word out, and I never went to the public lectures again. And they were charging 4 guineas for that, and that was a lot of money in those days.
So you got your 2-year qualification, did you?
Yes.
And then you became a full teacher, did you?
Yes.
And then you started teaching, did you?
Started teaching.
I see. Yes. So how old were you when you started teaching properly?
Well, 16, 18, about 21.
Mm. What, you haven't told me, why were you a socialist? What made you a socialist?
Cool, I should think so. I mean, any thinking person would be a socialist in those days.
Tell me what...
Really, the poverty was terrible. I used to frequently buy jugs of cocoa and bread and margarine for some of my children in my class, because they used to come to school in practically rags and nothing on their feet, and sit in the cold classroom, little things. I couldn't go and learn things if I'd got nothing in my tummy. How could you expect children to behave themselves when they were hungry?
So you became a socialist?
The wages, a lot of those children, their fathers were on the railway. And the railwayman's wages in those days, a porter, was 11 shillings a week. 11 shillings a week. Mm.
But was it your teaching that made you a socialist then?
Oh, well, no, I got it in me to start with.
Had you? You got it from your father, really, did you?
Well, no, I don't think so, because he was a liberal, you see. Mm. Oh, you know, he wasn't socialist.
Where do you get the ideas from? Did you go to meetings or?
It was always a little, you see. Oh, I don't know, I came with it.
Did you?
I tell you, look here, I could read when I was three. And I used to read newspapers when I was three.
Yeah.
Actually, when I was quite a baby, my father, when he came home from work, and I used to sit on his knee, and I know I was only three because my brother wasn't born then, you see. And I used to sit on his knee, and I started with the nursery rhymes, really, you see. And I used to go, the cat, Matt. And I picked it up all like that, really. I knew the nursery rhymes. I could pick it up very quickly because he'd got interest, you see, interested, and he was very pleased to see me. I could read. And I used to read the newspapers, and I'll tell you what I used to read too, what I was very pleased about. Anything about Russia. Anything about Russia, you see. And the Russians people, as you know, were having a deuce of a hard time. Peasants, I mean, they were at the mercy of the Grand Duke. I used to go round the table and I used to say, that's another one gone. That's another one gone. I used to clap my hands, that's another one gone.
What introduced you to that?
Oh, well, then, you see, I was about 16 then. And then, you see, it was starting like, really, it was really the Pankhurst, you see, came on the scene. So, you see, well, of course, I mean, I'd got that evidently in me, really. And for a person of 16 to 18 to stand up, you see, it was a dreadful thing. You know, a lot of women lost their jobs for joining the suffrage. Mm-hmm. Dorothy Evans didn't, but another one of them did. I know, lost her job through it. Oh, it was a terrible thing.
But did you...
It was a fight, you know. Well, of course, I knew all about that. One of the chief things, the women wanted to get the vote, well, you see, the women, as I say, they were under, mostly, the married women, really. Like my mother, you see, if they hadn't got enough money to buy enough food for the children, like that, the children were ill, which was a cause of a lot of the consumption, which was rising in Birmingham at those times, absolutely. You see, well, it all goes like that, not enough food. Mm. So you hear about the meetings going on. First of all, in the bullring. So you stand there and listen, really, like that.
They had meetings regularly there, did they?
Oh, yes. And all places, different places. The Mermaid, Spark Hill, Friday nights, I used to go up there, really. Because one of our members had a hat shop, and when things got very hot, you know, we could go into the hat shop, really, and she had the tomatoes and bananas on her windows and so on, you see, we were a bit safe like that. But yet, one thing about me, if I was up against anything like that, with my back to the wall, you might say, that was just my glory.
You like being...
I mean, I was terrified to get up and start, you know. But when once, I used to say to myself, and I used to almost say to them, put my fingers on my nose, because you can't hurt me. And I used to go rattling on. I mean, I don't know what I said. I don't know what I said, because really, you realise the position. You see, people would come out. The men were against the women having the vote, because giving the women the power, you see. Now, there was another thing going on at the same time under Eleanor Rathbone, daughter of a Liverpool shipowner.
Yes, I've heard that.
And she toured the place, really, often with her blouse hanging out and all her hair down there from one place to another, she used to come, on this question of giving people, mothers, money to keep their children. See, she was the one, you know, for child endowment.
Mm,
and I bet there's hardly anybody remembers her name today.
I agree, yeah.
She needs her. I was speaking because I was battling on at home. Rows at home, you know, see. My brother was against me, my father was against me, and poor, we didn't dare to say anything, and they thought I was terrible, and my other friends were your suffragette, you know, and stay at home and do your duty and all sorts of things.
So you never run your family round?
We had a terrible time. And one of my friends, she was dead nuts against us, so was her family. And yet, not to laugh about it, because she did now, not to laugh about it, I went, the first procession in London I went up to, she was a nurse then at Castleton Infirmary. She got a job there. And she was the first one to greet me on the platform and walk in the procession. But she didn't say a word at home. But the school, Miss Bolton. Now, Miss Bolton was just the proudest punch about me. She'd tell the inspectors, you know, when they came. Oh, you know, Miss Pitch, you know. Suffragette, you know, really. So she used to say to me, now, I can't go myself. I thought, no, you're afraid, because you see, they used to start on us in the procession. She said, now, Edith, I can't go to London myself, she said. This is what she said. But, she said, and she used to put a gold sovereign into my palm. She said, now, that's paid for your expenses. She said, you get one of the best seats in the Albert Hall, and you get yourself a jolly good meal. Oh, she was taught I better. That was Miss Bolton. Oh, I said, well, golden sovereigns, I can see them now, really. And, of course, we used to have special trains, you know, from Birmingham down to. And these processions, they were, oh, 3 and 4 miles long, and I believe...
In London, you mean?
Yeah. I believe the Davison's, I think, was about 6 miles long, supposed to be.
That's right.
And...
can you remember first speaking? First time you spoke in public for women?
Well, I think really the first thing I did was to sell votes for women in the gutter down Corporation Street.
What was that like?
Oh, terrible. They wanted someone to sell votes for women down there. But,
did they make remarks at you and insult
oh,
you?
Oh, yes. And the women were the worst, you know.
Were they?
I generally used to sell. About, well, of course, most people were afraid to come up and ask about women. They were here to buy, it, you see. Then, of course, at one time, there was a row with the government, you know, and the government banned votes, the paper votes for women, really. Now, I used to have mine for Mr. Smedley, the post office, you see, every week, really. Much of propaganda, really. I went in fear and trepidation. Mr. Smedley, I said, will you get votes, make votes for women? Because he was a real old country man. Oh, I went in one Friday to get my paper. He said, I don't know how you dare come in here. He said, you know, he said, you're getting me into a lot of trouble. He said, you know the government has banned this paper. And, he said, you've no idea what the whole country wants, really.
But you bought them all through him, did you?
Hmm?
How many did you order each week then?
Oh, I don't know. I've just
quite a lot.
No, I didn't buy them. I just got them from John Bright Street. That's where Dorothy ends. We got a place in John Bright Street, opposite the Alexander Theatre. Mm. Well,
they had a shop there, didn't
yes,
they?
Yes. Mm. I used to sell about 6 out of, in about 2 hours. Not as all right if I did.
You've spoken so well, we've nearly run out of tape.
But one thing rather interesting, really, I remember going to a meeting one night, and one of the women there, she was a very fine pianist, and at the end of the meeting, she played a lot of Wagner. Now, you know, war music, that is, really. And I thought, my goodness, I thought, these women are doing these things, you know, and all that sort of thing. I thought, no, I won't stand out of it. So I went straight up and I bought my badge and paid my fee, and then I started. And I think, well, no, it wasn't the first, but I know one of the meetings, they used to ring me up when I was in college. They used to send for me at the offices, Miss Pitch, you wanted on the phone, and they used to say, now, there's a meeting at such and such a place on such a day. Now, will you go and take the chair? So I was terrified, really, but I had to go on and take the chair. Really. So that's how I started.
But you were used to talking in public because you taught in the school.
Oh, I've got a good voice and I like to use it.
So it was quite easy in a way for you, was it?
Well, it wasn't all that easy when you could see a hostile crowd and you knew very well there were going to be some rotten eggs and things about and you were being sneered at and sort of, you didn't know when you were going to have a tomato or anything like that. And of course, some men can be downright terrible, you know, really. I mean, you've only got to be up against a man. And all the chivalry and everything goes. They're devils, you know, some of them are. Well, I'm telling you, of course some women are the same, but I mean some of the men are, really. If you're just about against them, and you don't...
So did you get hit quite often?
Oh, yes, of course we were. Oh, yes, we were hit quite often.
You said the women, when you were selling the paper in the street, the women were the worst. What did they say to you?
Oh, well, they used to pass very sneering remarks, you know, and... all sorts of things, oh really. I've forgotten really almost what they did say. It's really rather funny when I think about it now.
You stood in the gutter, did you?
Of course I did.
So you got splashed with mud and things, didn't you?
Well, yeah, you would a little bit. It wasn't very bad down there. By the mail place. It isn't the mail place now. By a jewellery shop, I don't know where it is now. I haven't been down there for years now. And wasn't Nicklam, something like that. She used to stand on the other side of the road too. She used to, she was a lot older than I was. And so that was that, and of course it went on with the different processions.
What about chalking? Did you do chalking?
No, I don't remember doing chalking. But we used to, you see, we lived at Handsworth. On the borders of Winston Green and Handsworth, and that's where the prison was, you see. So when things got hot and the women were arrested for various things, you see, they used to come up, they were brought up to the prison, you see. And then all the village people and all the people all round about always used to come out nearly every night, and there were really free fights and so on. People who didn't believe in it, and people and all that sort of thing, and served them right and all that sort of thing, you see. And of course they were, on the whole, they were intellectual women. I mean, they knew what they were doing, what they were fighting for and everything like that. Then of course there was all the trouble, you see. I think I told you, put that in my letter about the when Mrs. Pankhurst was being forcibly fed, really. Then the campaign, Dorothy, they started this, you see. We went to the different churches on Sunday mornings, and when the prayer for the prisoners came, we just got up and said, especially for Mrs. Pankhurst, really. And actually, for law-abiding women, most of us really were, that took a lot of doing, you know, to stop a church service.
What happened when you stopped the service?
Well, didn't I put in the letter, really? Well, when the prayer came along, you see, we all had numbers. I was number six. I thought, I shall never do it. I thought, I shall never, never do it. One, two, you see, you got up. Different parts of the church, some in the gallery, some down below, you see. Number one, you see. And especially for Mrs. Pankhurst being forcibly fed and so. I mean, other people, they find it interesting because I've got some comic things.
Yes.
Occasionally, which strikes me being very funny.
You're in church now.
Now, you see,
so number one, first,
at last, number two, and I thought I should never do it really. And anyhow, when my turn came, number six, I just got up and I howled out, really. I got a fairly big voice, and of course, the two men caught hold of me, and I was hustled down the steps. Thank goodness there are only a few at the cathedral, but they were, and it was the same with Carl's Lane then the next Sunday. Did two of those. And I remember we had some raucous times up at when there was an election on. Now, Henderson was in this election, and Henderson, Stoke-on-Trent, he put up for it, you see, Labour Henderson. And it came about then, the policy was that we tried to make the men vote against any man, you see, who wouldn't vote for women. Also, all these things, you see, going on like this. And
which branch did you belong to?
Which one?
Which branch of the WSPU did you belong to?
The WSPU?
Yes.
Birmingham.
The Birmingham branch?
Oh, yes.
The central branch?
Yes.
And that was run by Dorothy Evans, wasn't
yes.
it? Yes. She was the organiser.
Dorothy Evans, and of course, and some more. And there was, I can't think of her name, there was a one that was a red head she had.
I don't know.
All red hair.
So they had a shop there, did they? What happened in the shop? What did the shop do?
Well, it was the headquarters where you took your banners, you see, and all arrangements were made for the Birmingham people to go on the trains in the processions, you see. And it was all timed. There was the timing was done there. And all the meetings were timed because, you see, we were on no end of meetings. All over the Midlands, we used to have meetings all over the place, every night. And then there were the women who came out of prison, they had to be looked after.
Did you sell things in the shop?
Only a few, I think. Like badges and things like that, brooches, insult things like that. And then there were jumble sales to be on to get money and like that. Oh, it was a busy, it was jolly busy, you know. Quite a hive.
And did they sell newspapers at the shop then?
Oh, yes, you could walk in, anyone could walk in and get them.
Mm. Mm. What was Dorothy Evans like running things? Can you remember her?
Well, I can't remember her very much because, I mean, so I wasn't in a lot of that, you see. Mm. I mean, if they wanted things, they used to ring me up, you see, and then I used to go to the meetings. Then I only sort of took my papers back and that sort of thing. I wasn't in the shop a lot.
So you weren't an official?
I think that she was, what you might say, rather nice looking, you know, rather rather dark, I think, really, she was. Rather nice looking, you know, in a picturesque sort of way. Mm. Oh, and then there were the people called Greaves. Greaves. Now, I never saw that woman, till years after, and we went and lived, we had a cottage down the field.
A lot of pupil teachers in the Birmingham branch?
Oh, no.
You were unusual?
Oh, I mean, no, they were very terrified, there wouldn't be anything like that. Mm. Oh, no, you couldn't. I mean, my mother, we had a job where she thought she'd like to see Mrs. Pankhurst, and we took her to the town hall meeting, you know, and of course the meetings were so rough and riotous, you know, the meetings start on Mrs. Pankhurst and the other women. My mother was terrified. Oh, she'll never go again. Oh, she's that terrified. And so, yeah, it was really downright rough. Lots of the meetings.
Did she support you, your mother?
Well, she didn't really know enough about it, but she knew, she always thought that the women were a little bit of a downtrodden, really. Mm. And yet, of course, in some ways they weren't. I mean, my father was the last man on earth to downtrodden anybody. Mm. It was a case of economics, really. Mm. If she'd had her own money, she'd been all right, but she hadn't got enough money to put into the house for her ideas, you see. And so it made things very
difficult.
And Father never knew if he'd got anything in the bank or anything like that, you see.
Your father didn't agree with you either, did he?
He used to think that women were making a shame of themselves, really. And not only that, what do they want to vote for? They've got a man to vote for them. But you see, all women hadn't. And not only that, he said, what the women want to vote for. He said, it's the men who have to go to do the fighting, when there's a war. See, there was no side for the women at all. I mean, they forgot that a good many women lost. Well, I think I should have been afraid to go and throw stones at windows.
You afraid?
Oh, I shouldn't have done it, no.
Wouldn't you?
No,
you were too young, though, weren't you, really?
I might have done if I had been older, but it was definitely not allowed. I think you'd got to be 20 or 21 because of the prison sentence. Mm. And you were not allowed to do it. Mm. That was a sort of definite rule. So I don't think I should have been afraid. It never struck me when they said, you can't do it, you're not old enough. So therefore you've got to...
Keep out.
I might have thrown some of the stuff at some of the men who were... I shouldn't have... My idea would have been really to have retaliated, really.
When you went down to London to these processions, did someone put you up for the night? Or did you come straight
back
that day? Yes, I see.
You should train back. We had a train bring us back, you see.
It must have been very well organised.
Oh, very well, quite well organised it was, really. And, you see, it was the rich women, too, who were paying behind. You see, now, when I went to a big meeting in the Albert Hall, I think we had a big meeting after some of the processions. I'm not quite sure about that now, we did. That's the first time I saw Mrs. Besant. She was the principal speaker, Annie Besant. And I got myself a best seat in one of the best seats, you know, you seat on the telly now, don't you? In one of the boxes. And I remember the person sitting, she was with a party there, sitting next to me. And of course I wasn't very well dressed. And she looked at me and just said, you know, what sort of brings you here, really, that sort of thing, really. Mm. I thought, oh, I'm paid for my seat as well as you have. You say, well, she might have been a duchess or something like that. Because when the plates came round, these other women who were well off, you see, they used to took diamond necklaces off them, really, the rings like that, and the plates were piled up with diamond necklaces and everything like that. Because I remember Dorothy saying, she went to some countess of somebody to get her some money, and this person said about her, believe it or not, she said, but I have no money, she said, I haven't any money. She said, my husband pays for all my clothes and everything. She said, I have no money of my own to give you. Mm. And of course they give them their diamond necklaces. I remember Dorothy saying that, going. Mm. And to get some money. Because it used to cost a decent bit, you know, to keep going, really, to all these by-elections. We were always put up in private houses at by-elections. And work for the whole week. That was how I spent my holidays. By-elections.
Doing by-election work.
Dear. Come to think about it. Well, if all I talked about, I don't know.
But,
I don't really, because, you see, you couldn't get to people hardly, in a way. I mean, you in a way, you've got to plead with them, you see. But what did you got to plead with them for? You see, you've got to get a member of parliament to on your side. And it wasn't only that. You've got to get some member to draw up a bill, haven't you?
Mm.
And you said, got to go through the House.
Mm.
And then they push it out for practically nothing.
Mm.
Second reading. Then it wouldn't be brought up again to the next parliament.
Mm. Do you think...
That's wrong on the women, you see.
Do you think you're different because you were a suffragette? Did it influence your later life much?
Well, I don't think so. Good gracious, I got married, didn't I? And so on. I mean, it didn't stop me like that at all.
No, but did you get experience there that was useful? I mean, what was it helpful to you at all?
Well, I feel like everything helps you, doesn't it, really? I mean, I wasn't afraid of a hostile crowd for anything like that, nothing of that. And I know when I came out of college, I was a little bit afraid of some of the heads, especially one, really. I wish I knew her now, my goodness. When I came out of college, you know, see, downright on the college people, they are, you know. That some of these heads are, and can't do anything right, you know, really. And think, now my daughter, you see, I can't do about this time when I was 16 or 18. Mm. Now, Miss Bowler, the principal of the pupil teacher centre, she had me up to her room. So she said, "Now, Edith," she said, "I see you trotting off," she said, "across the yard every dinner time." She said, "Now, I must know where you're going." So, of course, they were responsible, really, for all this, you know, in Birmingham. She said, "Now, where do you go?" Because we were not supposed to go out of the building unless we had permission. You see. So I said, "Well," I said, "I go to the," I thought, "but cheek asking, but still, I go to the Birmingham Library," I said, "and I'm studying Buddhism," I said, "and I've started theosophy now." I don't think she'd ever heard of it. So she said, "Buddhism and theosophy." "Well," she said, "I'm very sorry, but I have to forbid you to go." Whether she was against theosophy, you see, that's coming the time then, you know, that was. See, that was a fight.
So you couldn't go any
further? I had not. "Oh," I said, "well, it doesn't matter." I said, "I shall stay in dinner time." I said, "And I shall go at 5 o'clock. That's all." So I did, you see. And then, you see, I was in a terrible turmoil intellectually. Because I couldn't make things out at all. And I don't know whether you've ever been through it, anything like that, you see. Nearly everybody goes through it in some time or other, you see. I could not make things out at all. Now, there were about 3 or 4 questions I kept asking myself, you see, when I got up in the morning, all on my mind. And I used to think, "Where are you before you were born? Where do you go when you die? Why are some people born poor, other people born rich? Why are some people born, they look like perfect, and other people are born mentally deficient? If God's a good God, see, a father, he wouldn't allow those things to happen. It'd all be equal. Therefore, they can't be equal." I used to worry myself like I really did, you know. I worried myself into practically nervous breakdown, you see, about it. Because I couldn't get any answer. I was a summer school teacher. I had a big class.
In the Wesleyan Chapel?
No, in the Church of England. Mm. I went and I was confirmed in the Church of England. Mm. Because my friends were. That was the reason. Just because I believed what they were teaching. And I didn't believe what I was teaching myself. I remember being, it's all in the back of the head, you know. I said, "Not to the clergyman like that, you know. You can tell on television straight away whether they believe or whether..."
Your problem then.
So I went, just at that time I got hold of this book. Anyway. So, you listen how I sort of this problem personally. So I thought, if I don't get the answers, I thought, to these questions, I shall just go mad. You know, it sounds, you know, funny now, but other people do, you know, go through this.
Teenagers have a very difficult time.
I'm sure they do in the universities and so on. Oh. That's the cause of suicide, you know, because I was living like that. Because I thought I shall commit suicide, because then I shall know what happens when you die. And I mean, it sounds funny, but you know, a few years ago there was a fellow up at so I was in such a state, I thought, I've got to find out. So I sat down one afternoon and I wrote out these questions. And I sent one letter to the Bishop of Birmingham, Bishop Gore, beseeching him to let me know, thinking they'd know. Canon Carnegie, head of St. Philip's, because I was in the teacher's society then. When I was a pupil teacher, we used to have a man from there to teach us, and of course he didn't know anything about what I'm talking about at all, really. And I used to argue with him. They used to say, some of the girls used to say to me, "Now, we haven't done our homework, the old man Gillingham, so you just got on and start an argument with him." See, that was me. I'm downright rude, but you see, I wanted to know. So, I wrote these questions out. I sent them to Bishop of Birmingham, Bishop Gore. And,
Canon Carnegie.
I had some prizes from him, you know, and he confirmed me. And the prizes I had were a bit ultra. because one was Zarathustra Spakes and Bergson, things like that, you know, really. Hot from the press, some of those were, really. Mm. When I opened Zarathustra Talks, ever read any of it?
No.
Whew, I was absolutely terrified. It was a German, you see.
Mm. That's...
And he really preached...
Nietzsche.
Evil, but evil was all right under Sir... Well, I'm ghastly.
So how did you solve your problem?
So then I wrote the same questions to Arnold Bennett, because I was reading all his books as fast as they came out, H.G. Wells, Marie Corelli, care of publishers. I never had an acknowledgement from any of them, not even the Bishop of Birmingham or Canon Carnegie.
Mm.
Of course, they couldn't answer the questions, I suppose. Never answered one. So, almost about the same time, well, I remember being in my bedroom when I called out these questions aloud, and I said, God, I said, I said, you know the answers to all these questions. I said, and I demand to know. And in the room, there were two, a tall person and a short person, in the spirit. I could feel.
Mm.
That's what I said. I said, and if I don't know in 3 days, all this I'm telling you is absolutely true, you know. I said, if I don't know in 3 days, I said, I shall commit suicide. I said, and I shall find out. I was going to drown myself. So, I don't know how many days after that, it wasn't very long. I'd only just got into the university then. I was walking down the corridor, and I saw the girl coming along in the distance. And she got a little paper in her hand. This is absolutely true. Little paper in her hand. And I was very rude, because you can see I'm rather downright. And I went straight up to her and I said, let's have a look at that. Well, of course, she was taken back. I've got the paper, though, then. And I looked at it, and it was the Vahan. The Vahan. And I looked at it, and I thought, that's where the truth is. I can tell straight away, you know, when I open a book, if it's what I want, the kind of book it is. I thought, that's where I shall find the truth, because that's what we were after, the truth all the time. Me and my friend Emily Lewis, you see, the other one. So we used to discuss all sorts of things, really, about the crucifixion and virgin birth and all that sort of thing, really. So I looked on the back quickly, and it said, Theosophical Society, Annie Besant, President, Martineau Street, Public Meetings, Saturday. Got it all in my mind. I went straight home. I wrote all these questions to Annie Besant. Annie Besant. Well, she was one of these so-sos, you know, in my days, really. So I wrote all these things, questions, sent it to London. Then I went to the meeting on the Saturday night. I said to my friend Emily, I said, I know where we can find out the truth, because that was a slogan, you see, because both of us, she wasn't so bad as I was, but you see, both of us were really mad about these things. So I said, there's a room in Martineau Street, I said, we'll go there. So off we went down Corporation Street, down New Street, up Corporation Street, into Martineau Street. And we got up the stairs. I remember the lift had gone wrong, and it was in a dirty little place, the dirty offices. We had to go right to the very top. So we went to the top, and because luckily, in a way, we got to the door, it said Theosophical Society, and then a man came out, and Mr. Onions, a man came out, and he said, well, I'm sorry, he said, ladies, he said, but I said, we've come to find out the truth. So, yeah, he said, I'm very sorry, ladies, he said, but it's the National Convention, he said, this weekend, he said, at to the Midland Institute. I said, come on, Emily, come on, Emily. Down we went, down Corporation Street, you know, I could walk very fast. And we went to Midland Institute. There was a little man by the door, Mr. Wilkins, one eye. And so he said, and where are your credentials, ladies? See, I didn't know what he meant at all. Really, I mean, I've had many and a lot of credentials. I never heard the word before. I said, well, I said, we've come to find out the truth. I said, come along, Emily. And we went in, and they let us in, and we weren't a delegate, anything. We went and sat down. And Mrs. Ransom was there with all her Indian robes on, you know, and she gave a lecture on Adyar, their principal place in India, really. I sat next to a lady. Have I told you this before?
No.
I sat next to a lady, Mrs. Thomas. She had a gold chain purse. This, I was 18 now. You can tell the years gone by. Yes. Next to her was a gentleman. My voice, which occasionally speaks here, said to me, Egyptian priest. See? Now, it was years after that man was made the high priest in Birmingham, the Liberal Catholic Church. Mm. So you can see he got that in him. Mm. And this voice that I see.
Was Annie Besant speaking to that meeting?
Oh, no, she was in London, no.
Mm.
So, it must come to be very long after. And I came downstairs. And Mother said, there's a letter for you from India. I said, oh, I don't know anyone in India. She said, well, open it and see. And it was a letter from Annie Besant, written with her own hand.
Was it Annie?
In answer to my questions that had been sent from London. And she was the only one. She said, keep on, my dear, and you'll know all things. And she said she was the only one who had the decency to answer my questions, Annie Besant.
What did she advise you to do?
She didn't, that's all she said. I was to keep on, and I should know all.
Mm.
I should know the truth. And I distinctly remember a few nights, it must have been, before I had that letter, I had a vision, and I was on a houseboat, mind you, and I was coming up the Red Sea. Now, that letter was probably coming up the Red Sea.
Mm.
See what I mean?
Mm. But have you got that letter?
No, I haven't got that letter, but I've got a letter that she wrote to me when she was 84. I wrote and thanked her for what she'd done for me. She lived at Wimbledon then, and I wrote and thanked her for what she'd done for me, and, you know, wishing her all the best. She was 84, and I've got that letter. I read it out a few weeks ago in the 100th anniversary of our place. But she was the only one who wrote, and that's what she said. In the meantime, I'd started to go to Tuesday night classes, Sunday night their meetings.
Some theosophy meetings.
Yes, in this room up there.
Mm.
And absolutely wonderful to me. Well, I took other girls with me, you see, from the Westland Sunday School.
Mm. Why were they wonderful?
Well, because it was all opening out to me.
Mm. You were getting your problems solved.
Well, decidedly.
Mm.
I mean, the first time, I didn't go to many lectures till I heard a man, a Smythe, Mr. Smythe. He started to speak about reincarnation. And I went up to him afterwards and I said, you've opened another world to me. I said, you've answered all my questions. I said, I can see it all.
So your worries were
and
over.
The chairman said, Mr. Tubbs, of Tubbs and Wilkinson's chemistry people, he's dead now, the old man. He said, my dear, he said, you've heard it all before. He said, you're an old soul. Those were his words. He said, you've heard it all before.
Were there lots of theosophists in the women's movement in Birmingham?
Which women's movement?
In the suffrage movement, you know.
Oh, I don't think so. There might be now. Oh, no, I don't think.
Not then.
There were one or two that used to come, I recognise, but no.
Mm.
No. You see, I mean, say, it was really only just beginning, really, in England. So it was only beginning, as they came through Madame Blavatsky and then Mrs. Besant, and a lot of other people began joining, you see.
Can you tell me a bit about what happened in your later life? You joined the Women's International League.
Oh, I've been in lots of things, really.
What happened in the First War?
I'll tell you about my husband, another thing, look, really, see. See, because, you see, they say you meet people again, you see, that you've met in previous lives. Had anything to do with them. So, you see, I married him in about the, I wasn't teaching many years, I married him about the second or third year of the war. Because, you see, they were fetching all the men up, Kitchen's army and all that sort of thing were being fetched up. And it was really, and my friends, who I'd been to college with and girls, they got married to fellows, you see. Nearly all these men were killed, First World War. The girls that I knew, Bessie Lewis's, Bessie Lewis's fiancé and husband, he was in one of the first tanks, and he was a fine pianist.
After the war?
The Women's International, I didn't join that for a long time, because we came out into the country, into here, you see, really, at the time. And, of course, we had a family. I mean, I had 4 children in 8 years. So I really hadn't, but I used to go up to meetings, and I used to go to the Alec once a week.
What's the Alec?
Theatre.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yes, the Alec, just opposite the women's business. But I mean, I didn't do any suffrage work at all because, you see, that was all stopped.
Yes.
And it was all, they stopped all that when the war came.
But you joined the Labour Party, did you?
But. I don't think I joined the Labour Party. I didn't join the Labour Party for a long... Didn't join any party for a long time. We'd got quite enough to do up here, really. And it wasn't long before. Well, then I began to have piano pupils. And the few people that were around here, we got a hall. We got a hall up down Peterbrook Road, you know, for dances and things like that. And there was a lawsuit about that, and I became secretary of the Women's Guild down there. Oh, but we weren't in Birmingham very much. We were out here.
I see.
This place had been built up.
You joined lots of movements in your
and
later
then,
life.
Then I saw the notice in the paper, Miss Walmsley, lecture on starting a class on... you know, what's the...
International relations, or...?
No, language. The, what's the international language?
Oh, Esperanto.
Esperanto. So I thought, well, I'd like to go and see about that, really. So I went to the Friends Meeting House in Ball Street. A young man was giving this lecture, and it was the WILPF. So I saw their literature, and I thought, darn my good idea. So I joined the WIPF. So I joined.
What's PF stand for? What is PF?
Women's International League for Peace and Freedom.
Oh, of course, yes.
It was started by a number, a group of American women.
You're a Labour voter, are you? I mean, you always vote Labour, do you?
Well, I've always voted Labour, except once. I didn't agree. And I was very annoyed because they weren't saying anything against the Vietnam War. So
I didn't vote.
And I just recently sent a letter to Callaghan saying that if he doesn't pull his socks up, I don't agree with the way he's conducting the Cod War. And I'm on the side of the Icelanders, as I've been up there, and I know what's going on up there. And I know what they're like. They have to work damn hard to get what food they can. And I said, and I don't agree with Jenkins the way he's treating Des Warren. And I said, and I don't agree with you joining the common market and the nice mess you've got us into. And I said a few other things. And if you don't pull your socks up, I said, I shan't vote Labour next time.
I think that kept him quiet.
Oh, I did, John. I sent it back, you know.
Did you?
I always get a letter back from Barbara Castle and Roy Jenkins and what's the deputy man's name?
Michael Foot, you mean?
Foot. Be surprised, she said. You keep on writing to your MPs. She said, very often, it will make an MP absolutely change his mind.
If he gets so many
hundreds of letters against what he's going to do.
Did she say that in a speech?
That's what she said.
Was it a speech she gave that you heard when she said that? Or
I think I when I read it or when I heard
I
it.
See,
read
yes.
it, I expect.
Yes.
Yes. You see, another story. Now, I used to get out of bed. Now, I was only three. See, because I now remember my boy was 4 years old and he hadn't been born. I used to get out of bed and I used to pray and shout in the corner of the bedroom, terrify my poor mother. I mean, she told me this. And I used to say, please God, don't let them chop off the Queen's head. Don't let them chop off the Queen's head, you see. And there was a big cross on our bedroom door, but there wasn't. But I could see a big cross. And I was with some, what they called, Sisters of Mercy, you know. I was with nuns. But I wasn't, you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
See? And the other nightmare I had, I was being crushed between two big stones. And it was absolutely horrible, you can guess. And so they used to fetch my little father, used to fetch me down night after night. I used to dread going to bed all day because I was screaming the place down. And those were the two nightmares, you see. Well, for myself, I've had ample evidence about that, the Queen. Because I could tell you some experience I've had concerning Marie Antoinette.
Right.
You might have heard it.
That's right.
Do you know it?
Yeah, I know some of the words, yes.